You've heard the word effect size?
Effect measure.
Effect measure. Yeah, effect size. Effect size. They're very specific about it. No? Yeah, but how is it, what they think of a big one as 0.2 and a bigger one as 0.4 and a small one as 0.1 or something like that? They have numbers moderate, medium, big. But how is it calculated? Effect size.
I don't know. In EPI, I think it depends on whether you are using the risk.
Yeah. No, EPI I understand, but this is quantitative. Quantitative differences.
It's like standard deviations.
Yeah. So, for example, how much taller or shorter are women than men, or are men taller than women, or vice versa? What's one way to call that? One is it's 4 inches, or 10 centimeters. It's 10 centimeters out of 170, isn't it? Let's say 170 is about the height. So it's 10 centimeters out of 170, so that's whatever that. 10 out of 170, that's about 6 or 7%, right? So men and women are about 6% difference in height on average, right? What other way could you do it? You could give the absolute difference, which again now means you have to know which scale we're talking about, inches or centimeters. At least the percent doesn't have that. Any other way of thinking of it?
Coefficient of standardization?
Meaning?
The difference between this and the standard divided by the standard deviation.
Yeah. So if you had this for women and this for men, I haven't drawn them right here, but two overlapping distributions, right? Let's say they had a common sigma, right? But one has mu 1 and mu 1 has mu 2, and they have a common sigma here, right? You could take this, right? So this would now be 175 is men, let's say, centimeters. 165 is women. And how much is sigma? Maybe 10 centimeters? No, not even. 6, 7. It's about 2 inches, so it's about 5 or 6. 5 or 6. Or six or seven, maybe. Right? So yeah, you're talking about this is a difference of 10 centimeters. When the standard deviation within the distribution is 5. So that's a very natural one to think of. That's a very big difference in psychology, because that's an effect estimate of 2. Right? They usually talk about effect estimates of 0.5 is a big one, 0.2 is a small one. This says there's a 0.2 standard deviation shift, right? Or 0.1. Those are moderate and small effect sizes. So these are called effect sizes. So you see, it's a neutral way to talk about effect size. Right? And when they do sample size calculations, that's fairly common, because again, you don't know what scale they're working, but you have a sense of what a shift of a quarter of a standard deviation is, right? So it's a very universal way to talk. Right? Those are the 2 points, right? Yeah, R squared, this, and that. Okay. Okay, so we're done with the contrast. We're done. As factor is probably how a lot of people did this, but they got to be careful then about it. Okay. So, what did you guys do for the... Now let's come to the math 1 and math 2, because now we have to decide what are we going to do with math 1. Because it's, let's see, first of all, how different it was. Let's see if I have it here. I put that at 0. Okay, now sim. What did I do here? I thought I had a by. I think I lost it. Oh, yeah. What are these? See what I'm doing here? You can just put math 1 if you want for now, just to keep it easy. The by statement is actually going to say by. Math 1 is the thing you're actually focusing on. And I haven't put anything in a data set here, so these are just vectors, which is dangerous. Don't do this, even though I do it. Right? Tie these into a data set so that, why? Because if there's a something left over from some other place, it's attached. You know, this business of attaching, do you know that use in R? Attaching and detaching. Yeah, that's key. Because otherwise, verbs that are hanging around, and you happen to use an X before, and you might forget. If you tie it onto a data set for math and women, it's less likely that a random X will be the same X. Yeah. So, but anyway, I didn't do it here. But when you do this, the second variable is my grouping, right? So that's the by variable. And the third one is then what you want to have applied to it. So I think T apply is very much the same thing. Right? This is, and then what you get now is, what do you get? Oh, nice and tidy. You see, you get a summary by group. Right? And this is math one. So this is where we see that there's a big discrepancy between, right? So for some crazy reason, and now one, this is a bad, I don't know what C1, 2, 3, 4 are. That's why I prefer to have names for these things. But anyway. Yeah. But you can do as well, I think you can actually do two together, so you will at least have math one, math two. If we do this, comma, yeah. No?
C bind.
C bind, right. C bind will put the two columns side by side, is that right? Yeah. Now you see you're getting at least the two things together, the pre and the post. So we're interested in the post between these, and these. But question is, there's an imbalance. And my first question was, were you surprised that the difference was as big as this in the four groups to begin with? This is a randomized study, they said. They randomly split people into four. Are you surprised that there was one group at 5.5 as their math score, the other group had four, two of the groups had 4.5, one had 5.4 and one had 5.2. Is it that surprising to you? No, because?
The sample size is too small.
Yeah, there's only 20 or 30 in each group, and there's a large spread of math scores in each group. So it's not that surprising. So I don't think it's right that that would have happened. So remember we talked the last day with the fruit flies, the same thing, putting them into groups. What would have been the trick here if we could? I think it's logistically hard. What would have been a way to kind of, because now we're going to have to adjust in some way for the fact that they're unequal. What would have been a better way?
After they did their first test, you could have kind of ranked all scores from highest to lowest and then pair people off.
Exactly. And I'm sure they thought of that. Yeah. But why wasn't it practical?
Did you have to mark everything?
Because I think they were coming in day by day. Mm-hmm. Like you might be scheduled to come in.
Right.
I don't think they were done. Yeah, you didn't have time to get the math one scores done before they went right into the second one. Yeah, so logistically it wasn't possible. Yeah. You could have, if you were good about it, you could have looked up their calculus scores or something else and used that as a proxy to get them close. Yeah, so they it would have been important. Because this, anytime you adjust using mathematics, people are suspicious that you pick the best adjustment to make things look good for you. You know, it's always, I'm always saying, if you can stand up and say that we're matched, nobody can argue with you. Right? You can. It's a natural way to think, like twins, right? But if you have to do, well, I can fix this. I can make, that's like saying, I can turn men into women or women into men to adjust for gender differences. Well, it's mathematics, but it's got a model behind it, and the model is always an arguable issue. Yeah. So anyway, there's nothing, you're right, logistically I think it was tricky. Yeah. I was suspicious at first that it was as big as it was. I think your instinct are actually right, that it's not that big a deal. It's quite likely to get that. So I did a quick simulation, just myself, and I leave this in the code. And the simulation I did is to say, if I randomly assign these myself again, many, many times, how often would I get the max and min to be as different? There's a difference above one score here, isn't it? It's about 1 degree between, where's the 5? No. The highest is 5.4. 4, and the lowest is 4.4. So it's a spread of about 1 between the four means. And so I said, I'll look at exactly the same thing, but I'll do it randomly, 1,000 times. We could do the same thing by doing, how likely is it to get bigger than 1 or smaller than 1? If we do the ANOVA on these 4, we'll actually get it. Right? The p-value from the ANOVA would tell you what's the chance of getting something this big or bigger if you randomly did them. That's what the p-value is for the baseline. But instead, I'm just saying I'll do the range and I'll do it myself. And so here's what I do. I just randomly put them into 4 groups of the same size, calculate the 4 means, calculate the spread between the biggest mean and the smallest mean, and see how much that is. And then stick that into a vector. See? 1 by 1, save them. So I have 1,000 of these. So this is like doing 1,000 randomizations. And, well, take a minute. Why isn't it done? Error. Plot hasn't been called yet. Who? What's who? WHO.
Who?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then? Where are they gone? Please forgive me, I'm not very fast at switching. Yeah. So, on average, you should get about a 1 between them from the sample sizes. Right? You could be very lucky and get no difference, but that wouldn't be very likely. You could get as many as a difference of 2 between them once in a while. So this is actually right in the center of the sampling distribution. Yesterday I said I told these guys I thought the authors were cheating and that they picked out some or they did something funny, but I don't think so. At least not in that one. Right?
You also hope to look at the standard deviation of each.
The standard deviation would help as well, yeah, but that's even harder to do. The standard deviations will vary even more. Standard deviations are even more variable than means. They're a nastier quantity. They have a nastier sampling distribution. Right? Means are probably the most behaved things you can get. Standard deviations are a statistic that's nasty.
But you look at both, you can...
Well, yeah. But anyway, it's perfectly within what you'd expect. That's the point. Yeah.
Could you also look at how many times the p-value is significant, like between...
You can. Okay. Yeah, that's another way of doing the same thing. Yeah. Exactly. But here, only 5% of them, you're talking about the 5% at the extreme.
Yeah.
But the analysis variance will give you that p-value is basically kind of... The analysis variance should basically tell me now that the p-value is around the middle of the range, around 0.5. But I was using, the beauty here is I'm using range, which is max minus min. There isn't any test for that. The test is whether means are equal. So, this simulation can do with whatever you want to check. That's all. But same idea. But anyway, they're stuck with it because I think they couldn't do the marking of the first one first. Yeah, unless you were doing it by computer and nowadays, you probably could nowadays with everything being fancy. Yeah. Okay, so then what's next? So, all right, we should start looking then at what the rest of you did. Yeah. So what did you guys do again?
We use the MET1TSQL.
Yeah, as a covariate. Okay. So that's one. Who did that? So let's actually do it then. And I'm going to only do, by the way, I'm only going to do the... I can leave the 4 in there, I guess. So it's LM, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Math2 is... What do I put now? Where are my 3 groups? Let's do it with the 3 groups. So by which is my reference? So G, E, and S, okay. G plus E plus S. Is it plus? Yeah. Yeah, P plus S plus math 1. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that what they did? They say analysis of covariance. I think in their methods, they say analysis of covariance. That is the classic analysis of covariance. You put the covariate that's imbalanced in as another variable. Can we do a summary of that? We don't, right? And so now, what are we expecting out now? Again, before you run these, know what's going to come out and what it means. So there's going to be how many rows in this thing? There'll be four rows, right?
Intercept,
and then G, E, S. And then you'll have estimate, standard error, p-value, and so on.
And math.
5. So there'll be five items in the model. Yeah, and you understand each of them. So what does S mean? G mean? That means how much less is the G group compared to the reference group? All other things being equal, right? In other words, math being equal, math 1 being equal between them. Yeah. That's what you did, right? Okay? I thought I had done G. G is not found. No. I haven't got these in the data set at all. I have nothing in the data set. So that's the dangerous. I'm playing dangerous here. Because if there's a G hanging around from before, that's better. Okay. You can read this? Yeah, oh good. This is actually bigger on the screen than mine. Yeah, so now, hey. The thing that bothers me... Oh, I want math 1 centered. I had math 1 centered. You see this somewhere?
Yeah.
I have centered math 1. That's a much better one. Why is that? Why do you think I want math 1 centered? The intercept will mean something. Right now, the intercept means... What does that intercept mean? At the moment. It's the ND group if they had 0 in their scores originally. So that's useless to me. So let's put it as math 1 centered, right? And now, see? So now, we have... This is the reference group. And then these three, And then the math C is very important, right? Actually, it's by far the most important. It's by far. So you're talking about R square. Where is our R square now?
0.4.
Oh, that's really good in psychology. Yeah. Most times it'll be way less than that. But think of it. I mean, how well can I measure your math score in 10 minutes? Can I? So there's a measurement issue as well, right? These are 10-minute math exams, or 15. They're not very long. Why do we have a GPA for you that's based on 4 years of performance, right? There's a reason for that. The more you put in, the more things we can get, the better I understand you, right? The better I'm measuring you. But this math score is not there. There's lots of measurement error in the math score as well, even apart from everything else. You know, how busy, how sleepy you are, how much attention, how much you care, you know, the random choice of which questions in the exam, all that sort of thing. Did everyone get the same questions? I'm not sure everyone got the same questions, because they talk about having a bank of questions, and they were counterbalanced. I don't know what that means. Does that mean...
The order or reverse?
Maybe, or they might have used different questions for pre and post for different students. I don't know. Those are also measurement issues, right? And how reliable is that? So there's noise there, but anyhow. Yeah. One other thing before we come to that. Suppose you know how to get the other groups now, because you just add this onto this and it'll give you the other groups. Suppose I wanted to do something where I could see the four groups and I didn't want to have a reference group. Is there a way to get the LM so that I could get the means for the four groups without any references, reference group. Let's just do it a minute. And I leave out math, this, I don't want to have that in it at all. Could I put in, where's my reference group?
ND.
ND, okay. What would happen if I do this?
It's an error.
It gives you an error?
Yes.
Is it?
I
think R is smarter than that.
It's
not that an error, but it's smart enough to recognize I had five parameters, so there's one redundant parameter.
Yeah.
There's one redundant parameter. So you, in the old days, it would give an error. Yeah, but now it's smart enough to recognize that I can't fit five here, there's only four groups. Yeah, so it picks, and you see now, it picks, which is it picking as the reference now?
S.
Is it? It's using S as the reference, yeah. All right, suppose I wanted these. And I said, look, I wanted to come out clean so I can explain this to my uncle. I don't have to get into this thing. There's a way to do it, to get the four directly. What do you do?
You copy
the sum. Yeah, exactly. You do the minus one, right? And you actually get the four. See, so it's also saying that you don't have to have intercepts and things, but now, what are the meanings now? They're just the four groups. There's no differences now. So this won't give you any difference. This tells you what the four are, so you're worse off than before. You see what I mean? But you can get them. So I'm just saying, if you know your regression, you can see what's happening. Yeah.
So now, what's the condition
now? Well, it's no good to us, because we now have to go doing the math differences ourselves. But I'm saying that if you have no intercept, it will fit four, because it sees four groups, and they're fine. That's all it is, yeah. We could do that before without any model, right? We just do by and mean. Yeah. But I'm just saying it just shows you have some flexibility in how you choose things. And so, So I'm taking that off, right? And I'm taking off the ND because that's the reference group, right? And now what? So what's the interpretation now? That's what you guys did, right? Yeah, what's the interpretation? Let's go by p-value for the moment.
So it indicates the compared to ND group?
Yeah.
The G group, the moment in G group?
Yeah.
Have on average 1.3
points.
Point score lower.
Lower than the reference. Group. Yeah. And then the E and the S. So E is not different according to that, and the S. S is one of the other. That's the other stereotype one, right?
Yeah.
So G is the one where they're told it was genetic. Is that right?
Yes.
And this one is, so obviously that's stronger than the stereotype one. Is that right? The stereotype is not as detrimental.
You don't have like math one and
that. Oh, yeah. I have to put that back in again. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. That messes everything up. Plus math one C. Right? You're right. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, now it makes it difference because that damn difference is relevant here. Yeah. So S is... Okay, so the ones that are relevant, G and S are both below 1. Oh, they're almost identically below. Okay, so I like that story better. Right? To me, that's what I always thought to begin with. And now I'm going to do my own model, which is simpler. Well, I'll do it. Where's my one? I had fake something, isn't it? Misled. Yeah, so I'm going to put this in instead and just put misled here and math, right? Is this how you guys do things? Cut and paste like me? dangerous stuff. Very dangerous. I was saying to Pai Young yesterday, how long is it going to be before we're going to have things like, hey, Alexa, get me the data file from that far run me the model, tell me what the beta is its p-value significant? It's not far away, I'm serious. It's scary, right? Alexa could do a lot better job than me with typing too. What did I do? Oh yeah. Did I ever define misled? Maybe I didn't. I think I defined it. Yeah, okay, now. So, and you see mine is, it makes sense now, 123 is right between, not quite between 128 and 124, but it's pretty the same thing, right? That was the difference. Yeah. And the 507 now is the average of the two rather than this one and the other one, wherever it is, right? And this one, yeah. So far so good. So that's one method. That's what you guys used, right? It's a green. My method's more or less the same. It's saying, because they're two very close to each other, combining them doesn't change the answer very much. Yeah. Okie doke. That's as far as we can go with that. That's what they did. Now, who else did something? I'll tell you what these guys did first. Yeah. Just a second. Because I have it open here somewhere. Where was your stuff? This you guys? Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, what's this? Okay, so that's just the descriptive, right? So that's that, but that's without adjustment, right? Yeah, this is without adjustment. Treatment to you is group, right? And it's four groups, yeah. But you see now where the issues come in about comparisons now. So if we do this, these are not three independent comparisons. You see what I mean? Orthogonal would be a bit safer. You'd have less accusations against you if you do three orthogonal ones. It sounds more sophisticated too, right? To tell the audience, oh, they're orthogonal, so whatever. Okay? And what's this, N, D, and G? Is that what you'd expect?
Yeah,
and N, D versus S as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So that's it. Yeah, so hey, same data. Yeah, and this is good because it shows the spreads. Are those outliers?
Yeah.
Oh boy, yeah. Three outliers that are a fairly big deal in this. Yeah. Okay. Now, is that what you did next? Is that always the model?
For this one?
Oh, so you, wait a second, hold on, man. So this is your model?
Yeah.
Where did I see it? Wow. So he did something very different. So they did change score. It's called the change score. Yeah. You can actually put this into the formula, and R is forgiving enough, you don't have to make the difference first?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes, because I noticed that you did a ratio next.
Yeah.
Wait till you see the one they did next. They did a ratio. Math 1 over Lat 2 equals that. And even calculated the ratios. Yeah, okay. All right, what did you guys do?
We did the difference ones. Like, we tried both.
So you did this as well then?
Yeah, okay.
Do you guys get the same answer?
Yeah, we have the same estimates.
No, but more or less the two groups and the other two groups, they kind of segregated? Yeah, okay. So then if you do differences, there's no correction on the other side, right? But what's the difference between this and putting it this over here? I put math 1 over here. You put it here, but if I change this around and say that's a minus math 1 here, why don't I make that C plus math 1 on the other side? You see what I'm saying? So I have it on the right-hand side, you have it as a subtraction on the left-hand side. Should we get the same answer?
No,
because there's going to be no coefficient for this in your model. There is in mine. Do you remember what the coefficient was in mine?
0.5.
Yeah. So if we rewrite my equation, what am I basically saying? Compared to your equation.
You're saying that
My equation has 0.5 times math 1 on the right-hand side. Bring that over. It's basically saying it's math 2 minus 0.5 of math 1. Do you see what I'm saying?
So you have to subtract like 0.5 from each of the
estimates? Well, no, but they're doing straight math 2 minus math 1. My model, effectively, if I just flip it around and bring the half of math 1 over to the other side, I'm basically only correcting by half of a math 1. Whereas these guys are correcting by the full math 1. And this gets to the basis of the big debate that after 100 years hasn't been settled, as far as I know. I look at it every 5 years. They still haven't agreed which is the better way to do it. If you look up change scores, oh my God, it's a big battle out there. It's like America divided in two, you know, the same way, red and blue. It's exactly the same. Half the world in the research world wants change scores, which is what you guys did, and half the world said they're wrong. No, it should be put the second variable on the right-hand side. Can you make an argument for one or the other? This certainly looks cleaner to me. It's easier to explain to people. Half of math 1 as a subtraction. Can you explain that to your parents? They say, why didn't you subtract math 1 and math 2 directly? That sounds very logical to me. Huh? Can you give any argument why subtracting half of math 1 makes more sense?
This can keep track of the amount of how much you improve for each individual.
Yeah, but why half? I mean, this looks like a perfect improvement too, right? I mean...
Well, I think it's just a question of like, what your question is, like what you're trying to...
I know, this is a different question. This is now about improvement or change, rather than, actually it's downwards rather than upwards, right?
Yeah, because when you're putting math 1 on the right side of the equation, you're essentially saying like it's a...
Correcting form.
It's a predictor of math. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, you're not really considering...
Yeah, but mathematically they kind of look the same. Once I take my half over, it looks like I am doing a change score as well, but I'm not doing a full change score. I'm doing kind of half of the bottom of the first one. In other words, it's kind of saying I don't give the math 1 a weight of 1 here.
Yes.
I'm giving it a weight of a half. Why do you think that's actually logically defensible? Because this is what the people who say put it in the covariate on the right-hand side, this is now their argument. That it makes, to them, it makes much more sense to put in half of math 1 rather than all of it in the difference. What do you think their argument is?
I think it feels like the previous will contradict the next test score, but you're not quite confident that this would give you the full confidence. So it means there might be some variation for the second one, but you also want to just for the first one.
Do you trust the first one completely?
Yeah.
In the half one, you don't. You're not trusting it completely. And should you trust the first one completely?
Maybe not, especially if they gave like different questions, right? Because we don't know.
Well, also, right, but also there's measurement error in measuring math. Math 1, you know, if this was based on their GPA and it's 4 years of math, I would say, fine, I've got you figured out in math. We could use the GPA or whatever like that, right? But if you do a 10 or 15 minute thing on math with somebody, you're not going to measure them very well. So the half of math 1 is acknowledging that math 1 has measurement error in it. Right? And the people who are the best in math 1, are they really the best? No, they had a lucky day for those set of questions. You see what I mean? So it's saying there's measurement error. If I gave them, let's say there was no intervention. Let's say there was no intervention at all. Nothing between math 1 and math 2. No brainwashing. Right? And we just did a math 1 and then immediately a break and then a math 2. And you plotted the difference between math 1 and plot 2 as the y and math 1 as the x. So in other words, this exact model here, right? And let's say now, where is it? Yeah. So you have this one against the initial math 1. What do you think you'd find? So you have math 2 minus math 1 against math 1. Forget about the groups. This is all treated the same way. No intervention whatsoever. What kind of a pattern would you get? Who do you think would improve the most and who would improve the least? Who would actually go down and who would go up? If I do it in this class, I give you a 5-minute test to math 1, a 5-minute test to math 2, right? Not a bit sloppy, right? And then I subtract, who goes up and who goes down?
The people who score highly might go down because it's unreliable.
Exactly. And the people who score low go up. So it looks like an artifact, a funny thing going on, right? But it's a pure artifact and it's called regression to the mean. Is the exact case of you have a second variable and the difference between them. Now, a lot has to do with whether the first one was randomly high or randomly low. And that's what creates the difference. Yeah. So, I kind of side with the people who subtract less than the full thing. It's recognizing that there's measurement error in the first. But I don't have to call it that. I just put it on the right-hand side. And on the right-hand side, it'll get adjusted. If there were perfectly equal, you know, if there was perfect correlation between the two, then they'd be much more subtracted, right?
Yeah. So, like, if you had a higher beta, does that mean you're more confident? Like, if you run the regression with math 1 as a covariate, and you got a higher beta, like 1 or more.
Well, you shouldn't get 1, you should get less than 1, I think, but it's got to be less than 1.
Oh, because it would be the correlation.
Yeah, it's kind of a correlation, yeah. It'd be less than 1, but if it was very high, then basically that's saying the first one was very good. You know, there it's a reliable measure. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm maybe 75% towards the side of put it on the right-hand side because that's going to make less of a correction on the left-hand side. See what I'm saying? Are you're following my story?
Yeah.
But it's a big deal, and that's it. Just Google at some point, or I'll ask you to Google it. Google change scores. What's the best way when you have a pre and a post? What's the way to do it? The world is still divided. And they come down, and you're not going to change their minds about it either. But the measurement people very much like the idea of putting on on the right-hand side. So you're recognizing that the incomplete, putting a coefficient with this says, I don't trust it. So regression to the mean is actually bringing it down a bit, right? It's saying, you're not that great in math 1. I don't believe you just had a lucky day. So it takes a part of your high score, but not the whole thing. Right? It reduces it. I've been looking to get data from people who, from golfers. You know, in all the big international tournaments in golf, professional tournaments, you have 2 days first in golf, they play 18 holes, and then they have a cut. If you actually look at the rounds between round 1 and round 2, you have the same sort of thing, right? Some of that is psychological, that if you had a bad day, you might try harder the second day, but some of it is also random variation. If I generate scores for golfers, a pair of scores, the best golfer would have to be a bit better or worse in one of the days than the other. And whatever way he went, he'll go the other way the next day. There's a chance of it, right? So it's the same sort of thing. Right? We have it in pathology as well. There's a very good article I'm going to send you by a name of Gleason, who did the scoring system for prostate cancer and how aggressive prostate cancer is. And it's a score between 2 and 10. And when pathologists regrade something a second time, it's like regrading an essay. You have measurement error, and you find these funny things that the ones that were low the first time go up the second, and vice versa. It's nothing more than a recognition that there's measurement error. Yeah, but people make a big deal. Yeah. Okay, so this one's good, yeah, but it may be overdoing this, I don't know. But anyway, you get more or less the same answers, I think, from it, yeah. All right, so now this is your interpretation. But you left it at this, right? You only did this one? Where are the other ones? Oh no, you did the other three as well. Yeah, you did the other one. Yeah. Okay, so you have all three. Yeah. So it's always compared to that. But if somebody had happened to take another reference group, this would have been harder to deal with. Whereas mine, which is just two groups, it's hard to, there's no arbitrariness about two groups. One is the reference, one is the other, and that's it. But these are all philosophical differences. There's no right and wrong about it. Okay, so you did change scores. You did both, but change scores. Any other options?
Maybe the ratios?
Yeah, that's what you guys did, right? You did ratios? Yeah. And so that's like a change score in a way, except it's on a percent scale, right? Yeah. And now, and then you get the same answers pretty well again, right?
Yeah.
I was just amazed that you can put this directly into R. It's very forgiving. Okay, but what's the now? So the ratio null is now the one, right? The null is one, or the reference is one. Why is it? Okay. So one will be above one and the others will be a bit below that, right? Mm-hmm. So on average, okay. Does anybody see any issue with it? It's easier to explain for sure, and you probably put these as a percent of 100, then, do you? Mm-hmm. You could change them to, yeah, I think you did actually. I saw that, yeah. Do you see any problem with doing it? When we do ratios in EPI, do we do this in EPI? Ratios were big. Some people don't like them, but ratios are big in EPI, right? Well, what do they usually do for ratios in EPI?
Residual terms, not the
Yeah, well, that's part of it, but they usually have log of rate ratios as well. Why have they got log of rate ratios?
So that we don't get negative
values? Yeah. And I think another reason is that the sampling variation is more likely to be normal in the log scale than in the regular scale. I think that's the main reason, is that you're more likely to have the normality of the sampling distribution if you take the log of a rate ratio. But there's a point that comes up here about ratios. Ratios scare me, and I'll tell you why. Do you have data here on where are your summaries of these people? On mine, I have summaries. Remember? I had summaries somewhere here of the... Where were they? Yeah. All right. So if I took a ratio here, and I have 20 people here, now I don't know which min and which match, these are the same, but presumably somebody who was low on one would be low on the other, and high in, you know, there's a correlation, right, between the two. What would happen to ratios here? If so, let's say this is one person and this is the same person, right? So what would the ratio here be? Their math 2 was 1 and their math 1 was 1, was 2. So the ratio is a half. And then if there were a 5 and a 6, that would be a 20%, or 1.2, right? 6 over 5 is 1.2 and 9 over 8 is 1.1, right? So, are you as comfortable now about ratios as you were a few minutes ago? Follow me?
Yeah.
I think if I was taking ratios of a woman's height to a man's height, I have no problem with it. Why? But I have a small arithmetical problem here. Not a logical problem, but an arithmetical problem. Huh? Okay, what were you saying? Somebody?
In the denominator, you have 0?
Well, if you have a 0, I didn't even go as far as 0, but you're right.
We don't have one here.
We removed it.
Huh?
Yeah, we removed the.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. But when you have small numbers and they're in the bottom of a ratio, they're scary. They're really scary, right? If it was 170 centimeters and 160 centimeters, we have no problem with ratios. They're well away from 0, right? But it's a bit like comparing Montreal and Toronto in January for who has the higher temperature by ratio, right? And if one is at minus one and the other is plus one, it's scary. If we were in Fahrenheit, we might be better off, right? To be well above the thing, right? But I don't know what the hell the ratio would mean in Fahrenheit anyway. See what I mean? Or in Celsius either, but, well, maybe Celsius, right? But ratios are scary when they get close to zero. That's my big thing. So they become unstable, right? And so a change of one meant that the ratio was 0.5, right? But a change of 1 from 5 to 6 meant the ratio was 1.2, right? And so on, so on. So it's a funny business. But let's say you like ratios, and I kind of like them too. What? Because you're going to tell somebody a kind of a percent difference at the end, right? Is there any way, instead of putting the ratio into the model like these guys did, right? You put the ratio into the model, and that gave you numbers, a ratio. You did a ratio per person. You did a ratio per person. And let me give you, how many times do I quote Mietnin in the same talk, in the same class? Mietnin gave this very nice example about Mantel Hensel. I'll explain in a minute what he was about. Suppose we asked you to look in the small daycare centers in Montreal, the small garderie in Montreal, the little ones in somebody's house, not the big ones where there's 20 kids, but small little ones where there's a couple of kids in a private house. And suppose I was interested in the sex ratio, male to female, in garderies, in small houses, in Quebec, in Montreal. And I send each of you out to go to 10 little places, right? Or one house each. You each have to go to one house and bring me back the ratio. And I want an overall ratio at the end. Isn't it the overall ratio I kind of want? Right? So, come back with, let's say there's 3 kids in the house you went to. Give me the sex ratio.
2 to 1.
2 to 1, boy to girl, girl to boy, whichever. 2 to 1. There's only 2 in your house that you go to. What's the ratio?
1 to 1.
1 to 1. Oh, okay, whatever. Right. In this next house you go to, there's only 1 child. What's the ratio? It's either 1 to 0 or 0 to 1. Highly scary. Highly scary. Right? So if all you did was come back with the ratio and destroyed the original data, which is kind of what we're doing here, right? And I start putting them in the model, oh my lord, it's going to be a disaster. They're highly unstable individually. So Mietnin had a very nice trick. What's his trick for making the ratio stable? It's really simple, but you'd never think of it. How can you stabilize the ratio? Because what is it that you want? What did I ask you? What's the ratio of boys to girls in small daycare centers in Montreal? I don't care what the individual daycare centers. I want to know, is it 60-40, girls to boys? Is it 30-70? Is it whatever? You know what I mean? What would be a very good way to stabilize things?
Instead of ratio, if we use the proportion?
No, I want the ratio. I want the ratio. Proportion wouldn't much be much. Proportions would be unstable too. The proportions would be 0, half, a quarter, a third, you know, they'd be just equally nasty. It's so obvious when you see it, like a lot of things, Vietnam says, things that are obvious aren't obvious.
Can you combine some observations?
Yeah.
Like smoothing?
Yeah, but it's a very simple way of smoothing. It is a smoothing. But you don't smooth the ratios. What do? You keep going. You are on the right track.
I was thinking of ratio is some kind of denominator and denominator, maybe adds a kind of...
Add something onto each one to keep it stable?
Yeah.
I see. That's what you're saying. That's like trying to get 150 centimeters onto the height so that... Or adding something to the temperature in Montreal, so we're well away from the zero place. But there's right? That's one way, yeah? So you kind of stabilize each ratio, right? But then that's messy to get back. There's a simpler way.
Could you take out a log?
Huh?
Could you transform it to log?
Yeah, but what's the log of zero? Or the log of one or zero or zero or one? You're equally in trouble.
Just add like the total number.
Ah, the engineer comes out. You see, I tell you. That's it. So what you say is, add up all the girls, 74 girls. Add up all the boys, 66. Take 75 over 66. Do you trust it? Highly stable now. Because if the individual ones now are not doing any damage. See what I mean? In fact, in sampling, there's something called a ratio estimator. And it does, you had a sampling course, somebody? Yeah. And do you remember the sampling, the ratio estimators?
Kind of.
Yeah. I took a sampling course 4 years ago, I didn't remember either. When I heard them yet, I said, oh yeah, ratio estimators are special. They do one summation on the top and one summation on the bottom. So the way to stabilize the ratio is take the total on the top and the total on the bottom. Stabilize the top, stabilize the bottom, the ratio will be stable. Right? It's a really clever trick. Right? And Mietnin has it. Those of you in EPI, this is strictly for EPI people now, and I know most of you don't know how to do the Mantel-Hensel not by hand, but by memory. Anybody remember the Mantel-Hensel? You have little tables with A, B, C, and D, but these are small tables, but you have a lot of them. You're going to have to combine lots of tables because you can do AD over BC here in each table, but it would be unstable. So what's the Mantel-Hensel odds ratio? Odds ratio Mantel-Hensel. Come on, EPI people now.
A times D over
A. A over D over N, but you sum it first. Right? And
CD.
So what you basically do is you have a stable numerator and a stable denominator. It was absolute genius by Mantel to come up with this. Mantel came up with this himself. There's no theory for it. There was nothing at the time. It was 1950 something, 52 or 58 or something like that. He came up with this. Absolute genius. But he knew about ratios, about being dangerous. So this is like adding over all the daycares the boys, all the daycares the girls. This happens to be products, but if the products themselves are unstable in small ones, they'll be stable in the big summation. Right? So this is the same idea, but this is a comparison. We're comparing two things. But when we're just saying men, boys versus girls, it's the same principle. Right? So it was genius on his part. And so Mietnin always says, don't ever, some people rewrite this. Over, it's AD over BC with some kind of a thing, over the sum of these things, right? You can rewrite this of BC over N, I think. And this is the odds ratio. Something like that. It's a weighted average of the individual odds ratios in the table. Arithmetically, it looks the same. You're just playing with the algebra, but it's a very dangerous thing to be doing, to telling somebody that you have a weighted average of ratios. Instead of an average of ratios, say a ratio of averages or a ratio of sums is much safer than the sum of the ratios or the average of the ratio. That's the point. So, given that, what, in other words, I like ratios, but I don't like to make individual numbers out of them, so how could we do this another way? For each group, make a ratio of math 2, sum of math 2 to math 1. Right? That's going to be a single number. Right? So it's math 1 bar and math 2 bar, basically. Right? But it's a single number per group now. You've done all of the aggregation first, and then you make the ratio after, rather than aggregating the ratios. Okay? Everyone's with me?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
What I'm going to do for the groups is I'm going to sum all the math 2 scores for the group. sum the math 1 scores for the same group, and take one ratio of those.
Okay.
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
And then I'll get a ratio for each group. And it should come very close to what you're doing in your model anyway, right? It should come close. But now, you're stuck now, and someone says, what about the p-value, what about the standard error, what about all the other things? Because I have no data set now, there's no model, I just average math 2 over math 1. Sum math 2 over sum math 1 in each group. How on earth am I going to get p-values and standard errors and all the other things I want? And now you guys are modern and know that there's a way to do it.
Bootstrap.
Aha, bootstrap. See, bootstrap now is very clever because we came up with a new estimator. A new estimator that you can't do by regression anymore. You're right? Because we have only one number per group. It's very, but you know, it's a very logical thing, right? Yeah, but the beauty of it is today, compared to when I was going to school, you can get standard errors for that without even knowing the formula. When I did when you did the sampling course, there was a variance for that ugly ratio. Do you remember it? Yeah, it had a delta method and a whole lot of things in it. You can use the delta method and other things too, yeah. But that's it, but today you'd bootstrap. And what does bootstrap mean for those? Who knows what a bootstrap is? Who knows what it is? Come on. Who doesn't know? Okay, the others of those who know, you don't know what a bootstrap is? No? Okay, a bootstrap means you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, by your laces. That's what it really means. It means getting something for nothing. Okay, it's a name that Efron gave to a special technique. So, who wants to tell the others what a bootstrap is? A bootstrap standard error. Yeah? So let's say we have 22 kids, or girls, women, in group 1.
Yeah.
We want a standard error for the ratio.
So we've got 22 unique values for them.
Yeah.
And then we want to, and that's our sample, so yeah, we want to create a simulated population. So instead of having 22, so we take those 22 and repeat it like thousands of times, so then we have this huge sample of all these people that are just reproductions of our sample.
So it's like you photocopied the data.
We photocopied the data, and
yeah,
now we have like 10,000 women,
yeah,
and then we take a bunch of different random samples.
Upsize 22.
And so then,
see,
maybe out of this 10,000 population,
yeah,
we do 1,000.
So you can simulate, you basically bootstrap is simulating from a created population,
yeah,
right? And it's assuming that the 22 are close enough to what the real variation is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. How you actually do it in practice is a little simpler than that. You don't have to photocopy, right? But the idea is you're simulating, it's a simulated sampling distribution, right? But you simulate 22 from an infinite population, right? From an infinite population, right? So it's a bit like I was doing with simulating there, right? Yeah, yeah. And so, that's the modern one. There was one that happened before that when I went to school. We didn't have bootstrapping. We had another one, which was another resampling method, a little different. Yeah. But that's bootstrapping. But what you do now is you tell the thing, bootstrap the 22. So we'd have the ratio, right? Which is the sum of math 2 over the sum of math 1. Right? That's the ratio. And then we would say, create these samples from the 22, and redo it as many times as you want until you get a histogram, and then you can measure the standard deviation in the histogram. Isn't that it? Yeah, something like that. And that's your standard error for the sample distribution. Yeah. There are packages that will immediately do it. Right? Or it's not hard to do yourself. Right? What you end up doing, to make it simple, is the first bootstrap sample will, where's my data set? So I won't do the full thing, but where's my? Let's say I'm just bootstrapping. Oh, come on, how do I do it fast? So I have math 2, just did math 2 for the moment. What the, oh, okay. Math 2 in the group where, G equals 1. Is that right? That'll be, is that right? Yeah. This is the math two in the G group, right? If I now sample that, and I went, I think the next thing you have to say is the size, so that's 20, is it 22? How many is that? I have to have the same size, is it? Look, yeah, how about I do that, right? So my y, here's my y. Y is that, right? And then I sample y, and then as how many of them? Length y, right? If I did that, what would happen? If I did that, it would take with it. What would it do? Let's do it. What would it do? It would just reorder them, but it takes 22, and it, the same 22 as where they're originally, just reordered, so it wouldn't be any different. So what's the trick then? Yeah, if you replace equals true now, you see how many sixes were there before? How many sixes were there before? There was one, two, three sixes before. How many sixes are there now?
Nine.
Take 49. Nine. Nine.
I have two nines.
Huh? I have 2 9s. You had 1 9 here, and there's 2 9 here. So the 9 is getting used twice. But in the next sample, 9 mightn't be there at all. Right? So it's just, but I think the photocopying is the better way to think of it. That it's like taking a big one, and then you want 22 out of it, but they're the same clones of each other. So that's why the replace equals is like photocopying. You're getting a different photocopy of the same person. Yeah. So that's bootstrapping. Yeah?
So are you kind of saying how homogeneous is your sample? Or kind of bootstrapping?
Well, you're saying if I have you guys, right, here, and I want to create other samples like you, right? Like you. Well, I'm kind of stuck because I only have you. But I'd say, look, how about I take two like him one time and not you at all, and one of you and three of you and whatever. You know, it's a different sample now, right? It's a little different. So I'm jumbling them around, right? But it's like I made a photocopy of us millions of times and then took 22 from. So it's what I'm doing is I'm using the class as a template, photocopy. I'm assuming that the class is rich enough that it has all the types, like Noah's Ark. You see what I mean? It's like Noah's Ark. It has all the types in it, and now I'm just making copies of Noah's Ark many, many times. It's okay because Noah was smart enough to make all types in his Ark first, right? Or to take everybody in the Ark. If everybody was the same and they were all on a straight line, then it wouldn't build it. You know, it needs to be rich enough to have kind of perturbations in it. Yeah. So that's the modern way of doing a ratio is you bootstrap the ratio. Right? There was an older way when I went to school, which was leave them out one at a time. You take 22, you leave out one and recalculate the mean or the ratio for 21. And you do that 22 times, just leaving out one person each time. And there's also a formula for getting that standard error, but that's called the jackknife standard error. Jackknife is all about leaving one out and seeing how much change. Right? I'm watching the clock. Is there anything we haven't done that we should have done? Like, did anybody else have a different way of doing it than we did already? Have we kicked this around as much as we can? So anyways, there's a good few lessons today as well. But anyway, yeah. But the bootstrap is the modern way. So it now means we can be much braver about doing things than before. And so if you really like ratios, be careful with the stabilization. If there were ratios of men to women's heights, I wouldn't fuss about it. Right? But once they're down near zero, they're scary. Yeah. I don't know what the log does for that. If they're down near zero, the log will be scary too. All right? Yeah, so the main thing is don't do things on small numbers individually. Aggregate first and then stable that. Okay, so that's good. So I hope those of you who are celebrating tonight feel try and party a bit, right? I know they're worried. These guys are worried about their parents and others elsewhere tonight, right? Hey, what were you going to say?
What's happening today?
These guys will tell you.
See.
Chinese New Year's tomorrow, right? But the party starts tonight. It's like Christmas, I guess. So if it's Christmas Eve, we have the big party. I was listening on the radio this morning, and they were saying that there's a family meal tonight. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we wanted to be home, but can't be now in China. Yeah. And they were telling us, what are the favorite foods for this one? I'm making these guys homesick. They were telling me that in some part, this lady was on the radio saying that in the dumplings, sometimes they would put something special in the dumpling, like a ring or an emblem. Is that true?
Or maybe a coin.
A coin, yeah, yeah. When I think of that, any of you others who have religious ceremonies or cultural ceremonies have things in the food, like special thing? No? We had it in Ireland for Halloween. We had the same thing. There was a bread, kind of a raisin bread that was made at Halloween. And there was, we kids, there was a ring was always put in it. And the ring was, if you got that slice, it meant you were going to get married in the next year. If it was a bean was rich. If it was a pea, it was poverty. And given that it was Halloween, which is all about death, in pagan Ireland, there was a matchstick, or a piece of wood. What do you think the wood was? Really dark. Yeah, coffin, a coffin. Yeah, so you had to try and get the, well, we didn't want the ring either, but yeah, we certainly didn't want the matchstick, which is the coffin. Yeah. So, but it's only good things in the ones here? It's only good things in the dumpling?
Only good things.
Okay, I like that better. Yeah. But somebody had Portuguese, I think it was, at Christmas. My family here had gone to a Portuguese restaurant and they found there's a bread that they were making after Christmas with rings. Statues in it or something nice. Yeah, after Christmas. So I guess all cultures have something close. Anyway, and maybe be thinking about looking up whether these masks for preventing infection. I showed one to you yesterday. That's a mask versus a respirator. But I'm curious how much these masks matter. And if you can find for the next day out of curiosity, just scientifically, whether there's any studies on how good these masks are.
You mean you have a face mask?
Yeah. The ones that you see everybody, going to the store and trying to buy, they're probably all bought now, you can't get them, right? In China, they've run out, I'm sure, by now. Yeah.
I didn't wonder how effective it was.
Yeah.
Well, the volcano people were wearing those masks as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I was trying to find the story, but I couldn't find it even last night when I was looking. I was trying to find the story of one of the early stories in medicine about getting surgeons to wear masks during operations. Apparently, there was a nurse. I'll have to find the full story. Maybe any of you know or ask somebody. I think she was Australian, or she nursed, died. But she was famous because she forced the surgeons to wear masks when they were operating. But because before that, and it, the issue was which way? Who was infecting who?
Doctor was infecting.
Yeah, the doctor was sneezing into the patient. And I guess that's still the reason, is it?
Yeah.
So anyway, this nurse was convinced. I don't know if they did a trial. I think she insisted with this doctor. It was during World War I. And she insisted that this doctor do it. And then I think she had a comparison with other doctors who didn't, to show that it mattered. And it's only 100 years ago that people were thinking and arguing like that. But anyway. But there was a really big study and a big stupid, not study wasn't stupid, but a big move in the U.S. last year and the year before. The nurses, I think the operating nurses, were trying to say that people should wear longer sleeve gowns and that people around the operating room should be wearing longer gowns. So they made special throwaway gowns that you could wear one-time things. I'll send you the list. Remind me to send it to you. Where huge industry created, somebody finally put it to trial, does absolutely nothing. Right? But you know, they counted out how many millions of dollars it cost for these throwaway gowns in the US last year, the year before. All because one of the unions thought it's a good idea and they kind of got it pushed through and so on. Okay, we should quit. Yeah. So email me, I'll email you tonight. Email me during the week if you're stuck with anything. Also, if anybody wants a consultation, I'm available by Skype anytime. If you guys are stuck on something, want to talk about, we don't have to come up here. We can do Skype from wherever. So, good.